Digi, featuring rotating exhibits, including indigenous and regional artwork, plus classes and retail gallery. The center is accessible and open to all. More at watermarkartscenter.org.
And we receive support from Grand Rapids State Bank, committed to serving the Grand Rapids area for over 110 years. More at grsb.bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
And we receive support from the Minnesota State Fair. It's the Great Minnesota Get-Together, 12 days of food, entertainment, rides, animals, and family fun, starting Thursday, August 27th through Monday, September 7th. More at mnstatefair.org.
This is 91.7 KAXC Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXC Bagley Bemidji, 89.9 Brainerd, and on your smart speaker. Celebrating 50 years of people-powered radio in northern Minnesota, join us at KAXE.org.
And coming up next is the Up North Report, but in about an hour, we are going to be joined by some very special royal guests.
Yes, absolutely. I wonder if they will wear their royal raiment.
I hope so. We will find out in an hour.
Yes.
For KAXE News, I'm Stella Mayerhoff with the Up North Report. Senator Amy Klobuchar is part of a bipartisan group aiming to delay a ban on THC products derived from hemp plants set to take effect in November. The Minnesota Reformer reports the Hemp Planting Predictability Act made it into a Senate budget deal that would prevent a government shutdown until at least December. Last year, the federal government closed a loophole created by the 2018 Farm Bill. The loophole helped grow the low-dose THC industry. The new law limits THC derived from hemp plants to 0.4 milligrams per container. Even the lowest dosage drinks and edibles have at least 2 milligrams. The hemp ban would effectively shut down the low-dose THC industry in Minnesota, hurting brewers, farmers, and small businesses. Klobuchar's provision would delay the ban for 1 month. The deal must still pass both chambers and be signed by President Donald Trump. A new monument at White Oak Casino in Deer River honors the 50th anniversary of a landmark U.S. Supreme Court case and its plaintiff. Aaron Bowman has the story.
A stone eagle sits on a black stone pillar with a picture of Helen Jean Charwood Bryan outside of the small tan and green casino. Bryan and her husband Russell were the lead plaintiffs of Bryan v. Itasca, a Supreme Court case decided in June 1976. It helped pave the way for tribal gaming. Phil Johnson is the general manager at White Oak Casino. He says he hopes the monument will inform more people about the case.
If you go talk to like our own native kids, I bet you 80% of them don't even know, about this stuff.
The case started when the Bryans were taxed about $150 by Itasca County on their mobile home on the Leech Lake Reservation. The Bryans went to what is now known as the Anishinaabe Legal Services and worked with them to file a lawsuit. The organization argued the state did not have the authority to tax the Bryans, as they were on tribal land. The case went all the way to the Supreme Court. In a unanimous decision, the court sided with the Bryans. It went further and said states can't enforce civil laws on tribal land. The case was used in future Supreme Court cases to argue that gambling laws couldn't be enforced on tribal lands if they were civil laws. Cody Nelson is the executive director at Anishinaabe Legal Services.
The legal scholars I've read, it's, one of the biggest for economic impacts to cases, pro-tribal cases in the U.S. Supreme Court and U.S. history.
According to the National Indian Gaming Commission, tribal gaming generated $46.2 billion in revenue in 2025. The monument says Helen Bryan, quote, will forever be remembered as a true hero within our community and for the lasting impact her efforts had on tribal sovereignty and Indian gaming. Aaron Bowman, KAXE News.
The Minnesota Department of Natural Resources announced the winners of its annual fish stamp contest, and one is a northern Minnesotan. The 2027 walleye stamp will feature an oil painting from Virginia artist John Barnard.
I just couldn't believe it. No, I've just been doing it for years and years, and I do it because I like doing it mostly.
Barnard says he paints as a hobby and has been submitting his work to the DNR stamp contest since 2000. Shannon Fisher, Minnesota DNR Fisheries Populations Monitoring and Regulations Manager, says some walleye populations have struggled with changing lake conditions and that stamps can help.
We do sell about 34,000 stamps a year. So it brings in about $165,000 to $175,000 a year.
The trout and salmon stamps are a requirement for some anglers looking to fish for trout. The purchase of walleye stamps is voluntary. Even so, these stamps remain popular.
It costs $5, and the profits are specifically used for purchasing walleye fingerlings from private producers to supplement the stocking programs that we have across the state.
You can view the winning artwork at our website, kaxe.org. That's it for the Up North Report. Find more of our stories at kaxe.org, where you can also find more content from our music, phonology, and morning show teams. From the KAXE News Desk, I'm Report for America Corps member Stella Mayerhoff, telling the stories of northern Minnesota through local news.
The Up North Report on KAXE is made possible by Woodland Bank, providing customers with personal and business banking solutions, as well as offering Kasasa checking accounts. You can learn more online at woodland.bank.
You are tuned in to the Wednesday Morning Show. It is 7:06 here on KAXE, KBXE. I'm Andrew DeZingle, and coming up next, we're going to hear more from Morning Edition, talking about U.S. munitions dwindling and the GOP midterm advantages. I'll be coming up next.
We receive support from Dale's Auto Body, serving the auto body needs of Grand Rapids and surrounding communities since 1984. Performing auto body and collision repair, as well as auto glass replacement, dedicated to getting you back on the road after an accident. More information at dalesautobodyinc.com.
And we receive support from ICTV, providing information for and about Itasca County on Apple TV, Roku, and watchictv.org. And looking at the weather today, it's going to be a sunny day with highs 75 to 80 degrees, southwest winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tonight, partly cloudy with lows in the upper 50s, lower 60s, southwest winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. And tomorrow, sunny with highs 80 to 85, partly cloudy overnight with a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms, lows in the lower 60s. Then Friday, sunny with highs 75 to 80, northwest winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. And coming up in an hour, we're going to be talking with some very royal guests. And then around 8:45, we're going to be talking about the Paul Bunyan Playhouse. They have a show going on this weekend, Avenue Q, to wrap up their summer season. And we're going to talk about the future of the Paul Bunyan Playhouse as well. Now for Morning Edition.
From NPR News, I'm Michelle Martin.
And I'm Steve Inskeep. U.S. missile stockpiles are running low.
The war with Iran is in its sixth month. NPR has confirmed that the Army has used up most of its long-range attack missiles during the war. That was first reported by Reuters.
NPR's Kat Lonsdorf is covering this story. Kat, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Steve.
Okay, what do you know here and what kind of missiles are we talking about?
So what the U.S. is running out of are precision missiles like PrSMs and ATACMS, according to a U.S. official familiar with the data who was not authorized to speak publicly. And Steve, just to talk you through those acronyms a bit, ATACM stands for the Army Tactical Missile System. The other missile, the PrSM, stands for Precision Strike Missile. These are all offensive weapons which can be fired from hundreds of miles away. And they play an important role in protecting U.S. service members, since it means you don't have to send an American pilot, for example, too close to an enemy target.
I have to pause and just note how impressive it is that the United States has an offensive weapon called an ATACM.
Right, yeah.
But having noted that, how precise can you be in saying that the stockpiles are running low?
Well, it's all classified. The Pentagon doesn't give out the numbers of missiles that have been used. We do know that there have been more than 15,000 Iranian targets hit during this war.
Wow.
But many of those have been in the massive U.S. airstrikes that the U.S. was carrying out earlier. Now, we should note that many senior military officials and analysts believe that the U.S. does have sufficient supply of offensive weapons for now, despite those shortages I just mentioned. You know, one of the concerns with running low on these precision missiles is that it takes years to replenish them. So a shortage leaves the U.S. vulnerable in future conflicts, too, particularly if China decides to attack Taiwan in the coming years.
Oh, well, there you've hit on something, Kat, because it may well be the United States has plenty of missiles for now, but military planners would be asking, what if we need thousands more for a conflict that breaks out next
Absolutely.
Week? That's why they would feel like it's a shortage.
Right.
Now, we're talking about offensive missiles here. What about defensive missiles?
Right. So that is a key question. A report out last month by the Center for Strategic and International Studies sheds some light on that. It found that the U.S. stockpile of Patriot interceptors, those are the main tool that the U.S. has to shoot down incoming attack drones and missiles at targets in the Middle East like U.S. bases, has shrunk by about two-thirds since this war started in Iran. The exact number of Patriots is also classified, but a U.S. official not authorized to discuss sensitive issues told NPR that the figures in that report are pretty accurate. Those missiles also take a good amount of time to replenish, and they're expensive, around $4 million apiece, which is a lot when they're often being used to shoot down Iranian drones, which cost something like $20,000 to $30,000 each.
Wow, what an imbalance. What is the military saying on the record about all this?
Well, not a whole lot because, like I said, all of this information around weapons is classified. The Trump administration has sent a lot of mixed messages when talking publicly about the issue. In June, Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth said that reports of depleted stockpiles were, quote, manufactured stories, although he also acknowledged that rebuilding the stockpile could take months or years. And, you know, Steve, there is real urgency here, too. Ukraine desperately needs U.S.-made Patriot missiles to defend against Russian attacks. President Volodymyr Zelensky is pleading for other countries to send some of their Patriot missiles to Ukraine, but so far nobody has offered.
NPR's Kat Lonsdorf, thanks so much. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Let's get another view of this issue with Stacey Pettyjohn. She's a senior fellow and director of the Defense Program at the Center for a New American Security. That's an independent nonprofit that develops national security and defense policies. Good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So are you surprised by what we're learning about these missile stockpiles? The reporting is that the levels are so low. I mean, for example, Patriot missiles down by two-thirds since the start of the Iran war.
No, not at all. We've never purchased enough of the precision-guided weapons that analysts believe would be needed for large wars. In the budgeting process that the Pentagon has, they tend to end up getting short shrift compared to the large weapons platforms like ships, tanks, airplanes. And habitually, we underbuy, and there's a lot of volatility in the buys. And that has led to really lean stockpiles that we found out if you are engaged in a high-intensity conflict and a long-lasting one, you can run out. This has happened in the past with other weapons like JDAMs, which were precision-guided bombs in the war against ISIS.
Why does it take so long to replenish these? Is it the budgeting process that you just spoke about, or is there something in just the production itself that takes this much time?
It's both. The budgeting process takes a couple of years of itself, but then there are fairly lean production lines for most of these weapons because of the change year to year. Industry isn't going to invest and have surplus capacity lying around that if the buys change dramatically. And this has led to really thin supply chains at like second and third tier suppliers. And that makes it hard to ramp up quickly because you need to increase production across the board. And it's particularly difficult with some of the smaller suppliers that provide key components of the weapons.
You just heard our colleague Kat Lonsdorf mention that low stockpiles could leave the U.S. vulnerable, for example, in the event of China attacking Taiwan. Could you just as briefly as you can explain that?
China has the largest inventory of missiles in the world, ballistic and cruise missiles, and a key part of their doctrine is to use them to attack U.S. bases and forces in the region. So the lack of air defense interceptors like the Patriot and THAAD would be a huge problem. We know there aren't sufficient numbers of them anyway. But there definitely aren't right now as we look at the balance between the two sides.
Hmm. Should the Trump administration rethink its strategy in Iran, given what this reporting is telling us about these missile levels?
Absolutely, yes. The U.S. isn't going to win a war of endurance where there's an asymmetry of the stakes like there is right now between the U.S. and Iran. Iran has much more interest in sort of holding firm and securing the gains that it's made in this war, namely control over the Strait of Hormuz. And it's willing to tolerate a tremendous amount of pain to achieve that. The U.S. has found that it can't compel it to give up by bombing it, and there are no good options to escalate. So when you add that, the cost of the weapons, the production timelines, which also favor Iran, it seems like it is time to rethink and focus on rebuilding U.S. military capabilities so that we don't have long-term vulnerabilities that could lead to aggression in other parts of the world.
Hmm. So, you know, we've spent a lot of time on this program and many other news programs, obviously talking about sort of the diplomatic strategy here, the diplomatic initiatives, and whether that could be different. But we're talking here about just sort of defense strategy. Is there a way to defend against Iranian drones and missiles without using Patriot missiles?
There are. So for some types of weapons, the ballistic missiles are the hardest to defend against. And we've seen this with Ukraine, where they have been asking for more Patriots and need them because Russia is increasingly relying on ballistic missiles, which are really fast. And you do need these higher end type of systems like Patriot, THAAD, or the Aegis system to defend against them. But it's the cheap drones where there are a lot of different options for shooting those down or disabling them. And that's where the U.S. military and, frankly, a lot of its allies and partners in the Middle East have underinvested. And if they have other options to shoot down drones that are more cost effective, that can help them to conserve the high-end weapons for the most difficult and high-end threats.
Really fast here. We know that Russia supplies ballistics and drones to Iran. Any signs that Russia's stockpiles are running low?
No, Russia's got a surplus right now, and that's part of the problem. As you think about this going forward, there's evidence that Russia is already resupplying Iran and sending back improved versions of the drones that Iran sent to them in 2022. And there's going to, I think, be a lot more of that. And Iran's going to be able to rebuild its offensive weapons before the U.S. can rebuild its defensive ones.
We have to leave it there. Sobering. That's Stacey Pettijohn. She's a senior fellow and director of the defense program at the Center for a New American Security. Stacey Pettijohn, thanks.
Thank you.
It's a given that Democrats have an advantage in this year's midterm elections. The president's party usually struggles, but Republicans have some advantages too. Here's NPR congressional reporter Eric McDaniel.
It's not a secret. President Trump is unpopular, and the cost of living in this country is high. Those are indicators that would usually point to a wave election for congressional Democrats, and as their candidates outraise their GOP opponents, they are mostly favored. But the Republicans have the resources to make up that money gap by drawing on outside groups. That includes party-affiliated organizations and super PACs. Here's Brendan Glavin. He's director of Insights at Open Secrets. It's a nonprofit that tracks money in politics.
These outside groups play a very important role in these races. Republicans have a very big advantage at the super PAC level. The super PACs I'm talking about, they have a $187 million cash advantage. And then the big X factor is Trump's super PAC, which is, you know, MAGA Inc. That super PAC has $400 million.
Republicans also won the mid-decade redistricting war kicked off by President Trump. It sums to about a 10-seat boost in the House of Representatives. And in the Senate, too, Republicans say they're feeling confident about their map, defending seats in red states that Trump has won previously, like Texas and Iowa. Bernadette Breslin is national press secretary at the National Republican Senatorial Committee. She says that Senate candidates have a compelling message.
President Trump and Senate Republicans have delivered lower drug prices, a secure border, new jobs, and lower taxes. And our candidates continue to speak with voters across battleground states who have shared how Republicans' working families' tax cuts, for instance, have positively impacted their lives through no taxes on tips, overtime, and Social Security.
Breslin says Democrats have been in a race to the bottom against far-left candidates in their primaries, and that Americans can see the administration's results.
Americans are seeing violent crime rates, for instance, plummet nationally, and that's thanks to the leadership of President Trump and Senate Republicans.
Democrats refute that characterization, of course, and point to cuts to health insurance subsidies passed by Republicans. And they're on pretty sure footing right now, largely ahead in polling. But with Republicans' war chest and advantages in House and Senate maps, recreating the massive waves we've seen in previous midterm cycles could be a challenge. Eric McDaniel, NPR News in Washington.
This is NPR News.
You are listening to Morning Edition here on the Wednesday Morning Show. My name is Andrew DeZingle, and I'm here with my co-star, Heather Johnson.
Good morning. It's such a beautiful day.
It is a beautiful day, and it's going to continue being a beautiful sunny day with highs 75 to 80 degrees. That sounds like perfect weather.
It does, and I am very excited to have, you know, ripe tomatoes, so this is all going according to plan.
When do you start picking tomatoes?
Well, the little ones we've been picking for
what?
Quite some time, the little cherry tomatoes, but the bigger ones, they're not quite ripe yet in my garden.
Are they green?
They're green. Yeah, mm-hmm. There are lots of them. But I got a little bit of a late start this year just because I was really busy. But they're coming along and it's going to be really good. Do you like tomatoes?
I like tomatoes. How do I like tomatoes? I love them on a burger. I love them in a salad. I'll have them in a BLT.
How do I love tomatoes? Let me count the ways.
Roses are red, violets are blue, tomatoes are delicious. How do you do?
Oh, yeah, that's not bad at all.
But we want to wish a big thank you to everyone who made the KXE Summer Membership Drive a success, from the volunteer DJs, phone answerers, folks who participate in Music Bingo, as well as people like you who understand the importance of great music and independent media. But of course, it's not too late. If you missed last week becoming a member, you can still do it right now. Go to our website, kxe.org, and click on that beautiful donate button.
Absolutely. I shouldn't be blown away by member drives and the outpouring of support for community and community radio. I shouldn't be at this point. It shouldn't still surprise me. But we had an incredibly successful drive. We had a big goal, way above what we normally would try to raise in the summer. And people stepped up for us like crazy. And just the outpouring of not only funds, but the wonderful things that people said about what this station means to their daily life, or that it gives them hope, or that it connects them with others. That's my favorite thing to hear, is that it's a connection, right? It's not just voices on the radio. It's a connection. And then we hosted Music Bingo, and it was so much fun at Bemidji Brewing. People were singing along well after the clips had ended. You know, they were short little clips of music, and it was this great sing-along, and I think it just, even strangers were like pointing and like, yeah, you get me, you get this music. And
yeah, our big blackout winner was someone who didn't even know we were going to be doing this and was surprised, and I think had a good time.
Oh, I think so too. And bingo is kind of a silly game, right? You know, it's not something to take super seriously.
How do you spell bingo? B-I-N-G-O?
Yeah.
And bingo was his name-o.
Well, every now and then it's spelled with claps, too, I believe. So.
Okay, let me hear it.
I-N-G-O. Did you hear my clap? I don't know. Anyway, so it was a really joyful evening, and that's just my favorite thing.
Yeah.
It's my favorite thing that we can do.
Thank you to everyone who all turned up for that, because, you know, we'd never done Music Bingo before.
No.
So it was a new experience for us as well. Wasn't sure how it was going to go, but I think it was a rousing success with the crowd.
Yeah. And this was your idea, and which I thought was fantastic. And, you know, we each picked out a few of the songs, but you were the one who put it all together. So kudos to you for finding those clips too. And yeah, it was so much fun just singing along with people, you know, and nobody cared what, you know, my voice isn't perfect or I don't know these people or anything. Mm-hmm. It was just a really fun night. So that was great. And then just all the people who stopped into the stations and said hi. And
and the hot dish time machines we did last week.
Oh, my gosh. Hearing Scott Hall with Jennifer. And then, of course, we had Maggie and Brandon and Dan Haug in. And Papa Steve. Who am I forgetting? I'm not really forgetting any. We had Cage and his dad, Brian.
And we had Christy and Gary.
Yeah, they were so good. And then, not Hot Dish Time Machine, but we had Julie on during the day. She's normally, mm-hmm. Julie Crabb is usually a host of Green Cheese. She was on with her granddaughter, Robin, and with Heidi Holton. And oh my gosh. It was such a great week of radio. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So a big thank you to everyone who made it such a success.
Yeah.
We literally can't do this without you.
No, we can't. Yeah. We are individual funded, member funded. We are not funded by corporations. And you're the reason we're still here going into our 51st year. So thank you. Thanks to everyone.
So if you still want to support us right now, if you missed it last week and you're like, oh, I knew there was something I forgot to do last week. now's the time. Yeah. We won't judge.
No, not at all. KAXE.org. Click that donate button. It's super simple.
All right. Now it's time for From the Vault, where we play something from the KBXE vinyl library. And this one is a new artist to me. And I'm sure there's going to be a lot of people yelling at me saying,
oh, no.
How have you never heard of this person? But I haven't. His name is Tom Rush. Have you heard of Tom Rush?
I don't think so.
Well, he's a folk singer, and he has an album called Wrong End of the Rainbow.
Ooh.
And we are going to play the title track.
Rainbow life from show to show, smiling faces come and go. Years of roads and highway signs, and the hours go on for miles and miles. Hey, now, wrong end of the rainbow, sad shade of a smile, everything. Cell still looks the same, and I can't remember where I am. The late priest has said goodnight. The phone just rings across the miles and miles. Hey, she left me, and I lost my love, and she left me.
All right, that was Tom Rush with Wrong End of the Rainbow from the KBXE Vinyl Library.
Okay, so number one, I hadn't heard of him either, I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that funky bass, and I love his voice.
Yeah, so, that ending there was really good.
Yeah, really good choice, I think, from The Vault. I mean, I'm sure people will chime in because we're crazy for not having heard of him. Because he has a lot of albums out and he's still playing. So that is really cool.
Are you going to go to a Tom Rush show?
Oh, I would for sure. Yeah.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, I would.
So let us know. What do you think of Tom Rush? Text us at 218-326-1234. Are we fools for not knowing who Tom Rush is until this morning?
We may be, but it may also be for other reasons. I don't know. It's possible.
Support for KAXE comes from Rural Pathways, helping rural nonprofits and communities find funding, measure impact, strengthen strategy, and plan for the future. More information available on Facebook and at ruralpathways.org. Rural Pathways, bold solutions for quiet places.
And we receive support from the Adolescent Crisis Response Team. This crisis intervention service is a program of First Call for Help 211, lending support to residents under the age of 18, as well as parental supports when in crisis or experiencing family distress 24/7.
And we receive support from the First State Bank of Big Fork, with branches in Big Fork and Kellyer, offering tools for managing money on any mobile device. Hometown banking at its best since 1912. FSBBigFork.com. Member FDIC. All right, it's time now for best wishes. We do our best to wish our friends and neighbors happy birthday and happy anniversary for today, August 5th. We just have two birthdays.
Just two. The first one is Hannah Henricks from Brainerd, turning 21 today. Happy birthday, Hannah.
And Steven Nielsen celebrating a birthday as well. So happy birthday to both of you. Now we're going to play a song for you. This is a new tune from Peace Mode. This song is called More Life.
Tears, take it back to the start, 'cause we are. Darling, lift your head, lift your heart. Darling, dry your tears, take it back this time.
And that is Peace Mode with the new song More Life here on the Wednesday Morning Show. If you have a birthday or anniversary to share, text us at 218-326-1234. And like we mentioned earlier, if you have a picture of a dog wearing a cute little outfit, we would love to hear that too. We'd love to see that.
Yeah, a business suit, anything, you know, business casual or above, or, you know, a working dog.
Because as we all know, it is National Work Like a Dog Day.
And we like pictures of animals.
Yeah. You usually get some nice pictures of bugs.
I have a lot of pictures of bugs on my phone this year.
How are you finding all these bugs?
Well, they're in the garden. So I'll tell you what, last year I was very, very worried because there really weren't that many bugs. And I don't know why, mm-hmm. but there weren't in my phenology area, which is usually, you know, my yard or like the state park or, you know, places I go on a regular basis, regular enough to realize that things are changing. There were just not that many bugs. And then this year, it's been so alive. Mm-hmm. And I just absolutely have loved it. I've seen all different kinds of bees and spiders and butterflies, and then just things that I have to look up and identify later, which is always...
Well, how do you look up? Like, okay, let's say you take a picture. How do you, like, figure out what they are?
I text Charlie Mitchell.
What is this?
No. Well, and also I have these guidebooks. They're really, really a beautiful kind of like a half-size paperback guidebooks. Mm-hmm. So for different kinds of insects, I have moths and butterflies and caterpillars and spiders. We have most of the ones. Oh, dragonflies.
Oh.
So, yes, I try to look them up in the book first, but then sometimes if I give up or if I'm being lazy, I will text Charlie Mitchell because she's our, you know, phenology coordinator and she's absolutely fabulous. So,
yeah, that's fantastic. So we want to see your pictures of dogs in outfits.
Yeah, or bugs.
How we got into bugs. If you had a cool bug picture, we'd love to see those too.
Yeah.
You can text us at 218-326-1234. Coming up, we're going to hear more from Morning Edition talking about oil price chaos and Kashmir protests. But if you're interested, we are having the green cheese picnic this Saturday.
Yes.
That'll be going on August 8th in KXC's backyard in Grand Rapids. You can bring a dish to share, your favorite beverage, and your own chair. The fun starts at 5 p.m. with live green cheese trivia from 7 to 9. Bring your own trivia questions, too.
Yeah.
At the end of the evening, we'll crown a new king and queen of green cheese.
Absolutely. And bring jokes, because there's a period, you know, where people are still eating and getting set up and everything, where we tell jokes and it is really fun. So speaking of those joyful live events, this is really, it's just not to be missed. It's a wonderful micro community. And it's so great to see people in, you know, in person.
Yeah, absolutely. So that'll be going on this Saturday. Come around at 5 o'clock, yeah, and stick around for live green cheese trivia. What could be better?
Yeah, and I've heard people say, "Well, I'm nervous about it because I've never been there before." I understand that, but it really is so welcoming and so much fun. So we'd love to see you there.
All right, now we're going to hear more from Morning Edition.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Steve Inskeep.
And I'm Michelle Martin. Good morning. There's been a pattern in the oil market lately. Prices soared in the early weeks of the war with Iran and have fallen several times when President Trump claimed a deal to end that war is close. Trump has been paying close attention to gas prices and on Monday blamed corporate greed for why things are still so expensive.
When you look at one company where they made 12 times what they made the year before, they're going to give some of that back to the public. And they better cut the retail price, the consumer price.
Let's bring in Bob McNally. He was an energy advisor to former President George W. Bush. He's also founder and president of Rapidan Energy Group, which is an independent energy consulting firm. Good morning, Mr. McNally. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Michelle. Thanks for having me.
So the American Petroleum Institute is the trade organization for the U.S. oil industry. It told NPR that the cost of producing oil has not changed that much since the beginning of the war. But prices are way higher, and oil companies are making huge profits. So does President Trump have a point here? Are these oil companies profit-taking and keeping prices higher than they could be?
Oil companies are price takers, not makers. And as you pointed out, profits are high because prices are high. And prices are high for one reason, the war with Iran and the Hormuz disruption. So it's true that the profits are quite fat now. When you see things like COVID and prices collapse, like in 2015, the profits collapse as well. So it's a very cyclical business. But this is all about Hormuz and the Iran war, not any kind of nefarious action by oil companies.
So as we said, when the president talks about a peace deal or movement on reopening the Strait of Hormuz, prices fall. But I am curious about why that keeps happening, since none of these
deals have come to fruition and the strait is still effectively closed.
You know, Michelle, the entrenched optimism that oil traders, especially crude oil traders, have exhibited during this whole crisis is something folks will study for many years and human psychologists. I don't have a good explanation for you. I can tell you in 2022, when Russia invaded Ukraine, traders thought the worst. They expected a much bigger disruption than actually took place. Here, I think it has to do with the unfamiliarity with the prolonged loss of Hormuz. That was literally unimaginable. So perhaps it's something that when human beings are confronted with something they never imagined, sort of a worst case scenario, they believe it's going to end soon. And so, as you noted, they readily respond by selling oil when the president says comforting things. And so we just go up and down in a sort of spasmodic oscillation of prices here.
But you don't think the 6 months that this has gone on has offered enough data to possibly recalibrate that?
Well, so there have been some, let's call it positive surprises on the crude oil side, right? There's two things. There's crude oil that goes into the refinery, but you and I don't buy crude oil for our car. Then there's the turning the crude oil into refined products. The crude oil has been helped by China. China went on a crash diet and just cut its imports in half. We also use the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. But those buffers, if you will, are running out or reversing. On the refined product side, it's a different story. Very tight, very high margins, which the president mentioned, and that's keeping the pump prices that you and I pay higher. So there have been some positive surprises. It could have been a lot worse, but those factors that helped contain things are sort of wearing off a little
bit.
Let
me ask you about the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, the SPRO. The president authorized the release of millions of barrels of oil early in the conflict. How much is left? How much is left, and does that have an impact on energy security?
Yeah, so we have about a little over 300 million barrels, about 308 million barrels. That's down from a 700 million barrel top where I helped President Bush put it there 20 years ago. It's really unfortunate. We can't use all that 300 million barrels. The low is probably about 170 or so. It's really unfortunate that both parties and President Biden sort of depleted our SPR for non-emergency reasons. It's a mistake I think we're going to have to correct in the future.
That's Bob McNally. He's president of the Rapidan Energy Group. Mr. McNally, thank you.
Thank you.
We're following protests in Kashmir, the region split between Pakistan and India. For years, Kashmiri Muslims living under Indian rule agitated for autonomy or even independence. Now it is protesters in the part of Kashmir controlled by Pakistan who want more control over their government. NPR's Dia Hadid reports.
In footage of a protest shared on social media, men say, "We will kill, we will die, but we will bring a revolution." Protests erupted after Pakistani authorities rejected electoral reforms demanded by residents of Kashmir, who form just over 4 million people. Then, in late July, the violence escalated as security forces halted a march of thousands in a town called Rawalkot. So protesters have been holding a sit-in there. Amnesty International reports that since the violence began, some 40 people have been killed, alongside six Pakistani security personnel. Protest leaders say the death toll is over 60. It's impossible to independently verify because the area has been under a tightening blockade. Pakistani authorities have largely shut down the internet and they've ordered foreign journalists to leave the area. One woman who recently left tells NPR that in her village, families are going hungry and there's medicine shortages. Like most people NPR spoke to, she requested anonymity, fearing her family would be punished. A spokesperson for the government of Pakistan-administered Kashmir said reports of civilian deaths were exaggerated. It denied reports of blockades, but said it had restricted movement in some areas to protect civilians from violence, and it accused some protesters of being armed. Danish Khan is an associate professor at Franklin and Marshall College who hails from Kashmir. He says Pakistan, an Islamic republic, has long presented itself as the rightful ruler of Muslim-majority Kashmir, but the state's violence...
That sits very uncomfortably to the story Pakistan tells about itself, to its own people and to the rest of the world.
For the same reason, Khan says, Pakistani authorities are continuing to conduct elections for the territory of Kashmir they administer. It's a way of demonstrating legitimacy. One protest leader told sympathizers that elections carried out at gunpoint have no legitimacy. The spokesperson for Pakistan's most powerful institution, the military, suggested last week that protesters were agents of enemy India and the state was acting softly.
State is being very, very restrained.
Khan, the associate professor, says Pakistani authorities are trying to seal off Kashmir for another reason too, the fear of contagion.
Political movements have a way of traveling, right? The elites in Pakistan are alert that there are a lot of grievances across Pakistan.
For now, Kashmiri residents are focused on their own grievances, and they say they'll protest again. Dee Hadid, NPR News.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Steve Inskeep.
And I'm Michelle Martin.
This is The Set List on KAXE, where we highlight live music around the area for the upcoming week. I'm Malachi Coons. We are featuring four shows this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, August 7th through the 9th, in Big Fork, Grand Rapids, Bemidji, and Virginia. Starting things off with the Bugle Boys at the Trailside Restaurant and Bar in Big Fork, Friday at 6 p.m. They are a folk blues duo of Clay Fulton and Nick Novotny, who also play together in Clay Fulton and the Lost 40, with a washboard and stomping blues sound. Friday night at the Trailside in Big Fork. The Oxbows are playing Bemidji Brewing at 6 p.m. Saturday for the brewery's Sunset Sounds music series. They are a bluegrass and folk trio of Eric Carlson, Erica Mork, and Dan Schnackenberg. Also at 6 p.m. Saturday, five bands are playing Clocko Brewing in Grand Rapids. Cars for Skids, a Cars cover band, plus Battery Eyes, Underground Till Sundown, Flintlock, and the Anchor Windlass, playing post-hardcore, melodic, and 90s punk. It is this Saturday at Clocko Brewing in Grand Rapids. And on to Sunday, Superior Siren are playing in Virginia at the Mesabi Unitarian Universalist Church at 5 p.m. The Duluth Quartets are led by the special voice of songwriter Laura Sellner, playing an eerie style of chamber folk with cello, violin, bass, drums, and guitar. Their sound is equally haunting and warm. Superior Siren this Sunday in Virginia. The set list is made possible by the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund, and we'll post the latest edition every Wednesday at kaxe.org.
And you're listening to The Set List here on the Wednesday Morning Show. I'm Andrew DeZingle here with Heather Johnson. This is People Power Radio, KAXE, KBXE.
Programming is supported by Lake Country Power, a Touchstone Energy Cooperative, providing the energy to help power ideas and strengthen rural development throughout northern Minnesota. More at lakecountrypower.coop. Lake Country Power, energy that powers our lives.
And support for KAXE comes from the Grand Rapids Farmers Market, celebrating 40 years of connecting local farmers and community. The Power of Produce, or POP Club, returns for the season. Kids ages 2 to 12 can sign up for a passport at the market. Each visit earns them a card to spend on fresh fruits, vegetables, or plants. The market is open Wednesdays and Saturdays from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the intersection of Golf Course and Pokegama Avenue. More at grfarmersmarket.org.
Well, I have some good news.
All right. What do you got?
For Work Like a Dog Day, we got a text of a working dog. It's Marley. Working hard to get me to throw his water toy, says Laura, and typical Australian Shepherd.
And the picture that Laura sent, Marley looks more upset that Laura has stopped throwing the toy and has taken time to take this picture and just looks not happy that we're waiting for the ball to be thrown again.
What? There's a great deal of concentration in those eyes. What a beautiful, beautiful dog Marley is.
Yeah, Laura, thank you for sending that photo. It's a wonderful photo. It is National Work Like a Dog Day, so let us see your dogs. Are they working?
Yeah,
Send us pictures. 218-326-1234.
Maybe they're just holding the rugs down. I mean, that's important, too.
Yeah, sometimes they need a break. Maybe they're on a nap break.
Yeah, napping is a very important part of being a cat or a dog, so or a human, you know.
Mm. I'm probably going to need a nap today.
Yeah, me too.
That's Heather Johnson. I'm Andrew DeZingle. And don't forget, this week on Headwaters, your source for great music and conversations and artist interviews. Today it's going to be hosted by Malachi Coons, and they'll be chatting with country artist Paisley Fields about their new album, Are You Mad at Me?, and their time with Queer Country Pioneers, Lavender County, You can hear the conversation at 10:15 a.m. this morning. And then on Thursday, it's going to be the latest edition of Spin That Ish with special guest Jennifer Barr.
Ooh, very special guest indeed.
Speaking of music, we're going to hear now from our KAXE album of the week. This week, it is Past the Veil by Shannon Lay. Lay is a California singer-songwriter releasing her fifth studio album. Past the Veil is a seamless blend of folk melodies, jazz instrumentation, and synthesizer flourishes. We're going to hear the song Horizons. This is Shannon Lay. And that is Shannon Lay with the song Horizons. That album's called Past the Veil. You can let us know what you think of our album of the week. Text us at 218-326-1234. But we're a little upset right now because real lack of working dog pictures.
Yeah, it's disturbing. I know there are dogs out there, you know, not being recognized for doing a great job today.
On National Work Like a Dog Day, no less.
I know. It's upsetting. Anyway, we'd love to see your dog pics at 218-326-1234. We just love dogs.
Absolutely. That's Heather Johnson. I'm Andrew DeZingle. In about 15 minutes, we are going to be joined by a very special royal guest here on the KBXE Wednesday morning show.
I'm a little nervous.
Yeah, you kind of dressed up.
I don't know. I think I should have done more, but
yeah, you should have brought the royal garb.
I probably should have. I'm not sure I have the protocol down. My bowing and scraping is.
Well, what did we do all those practices for? If you don't remember what you're supposed to be doing,
I know. I'm sorry. I'm just nervous.
We've been working on this for 3 weeks, and you're now saying you don't remember.
Well, my curtsy is not as grand as it should be.
Do you have the scepter?
I don't have the scepter, but I'm sure our guests will have.
I hope they bring
some
the royal
sort
scepter.
Of, accessories, royal accessories. Yeah, I think so.
So that'll be coming up around 8:10 this morning. And then around 8:45, it's going to be Area Voices, my conversation with some people who work behind the scenes for the Paul Bunyan Playhouse to keep that going. And they have a show that's going on this weekend, Avenue Q. And we're going to be talking all about that show and kind of how it's a unique pick for the Paul Bunyan Playhouse to perform.
Excellent. I can't wait.
And speaking of theater, there is actually some auditions going on today and tomorrow. The Brainerd Community Theater holds auditions for Sweeney Todd, the Demon Barber of Fleet Street, Wednesday, August 5th, and Thursday, August 6th at 6 p.m. in the Chalberg Theater on the campus of Central Lakes College in Brainerd. Find a registration link at clcperformingarts.com. Sweeney Todd.
Oh, my gosh. I want to go see that for sure.
What's your favorite Sweeney Todd song?
Oh.
I don't know any of the name of those songs except The Demon Barbara Fleet Street.
Well, there's kind of a... It's a little bit of a boppy one, I know, and then there's a more serious kind of a ballad that comes to mind. But man, I can't think of it off the top of my head.
Did you see the movie?
Well, I did see the movie, but I also saw a performance, I believe,
with Angela Lansbury.
Oh,
you haven't seen that one? That's the one that everyone talks about.
With Angela? Well, I was thinking of the one with Johnny Depp.
Oh, that's the movie.
That is the movie. Yeah. Oh, you mean the performance?
Yeah.
No.
Well, you said the performance.
The performance. I think it was on PBS probably. And I think it was maybe a little bit newer than the Angela Lansbury one. But it was incredibly good.
So those auditions will be going on today and tomorrow at 6 p.m. for the Brainerd Community Theater. Now it's time for our Daily Dose of Phonology with John Latimer.
On today's date, August 5th, in the year 2001, and again in the year 2005, I am allowed to be a party to a huge gathering of monarch butterflies. They gather in the fall, preparatory to migration, and on every possible branch there are hundreds of monarch butterflies just hanging out. Both of these observations occurred late in the afternoon, and both involved uncounted hundreds of monarch butterflies. This is the generation of butterflies that will move to Mexico and will overwinter there and then begin the return flight to the Northland, only to be supplanted by their children, their children's children, and their children's children's children. Eventually, they'll be back here, and we will enjoy their presence throughout the summer.
And that's your Daily Dose of Phonology with John Latimer. And we've got some good news.
Yes, we do. The best news, maybe.
We heard from Lisa on the text line. It is National Work Like a Dog Day, and we are calling for all pictures of dogs working. And we've got a big one working here.
Oh, yes. Lisa says, here's Garfunkel, better known as Funky, working hard serving beers for Oktoberfest. Oh, Garfunkel is so cute.
Yeah, Garfunkel is holding a hot dog and a...
It's
beer
a
beer can
drink koozie, yeah. And it's an outfit, obviously, and so
yeah, it's like a little. It almost looks like a hot dog vendor outfit.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, he's so cute. I would say I'm probably going to get this wrong, but I think he's an American Bulldog, but I'm not. Okay. I could be wrong. He's very, very cute, and I love his name. Thank you for sharing that, Lisa.
Yeah, thank you, Lisa, for sharing. We want to see your dogs working hard pictures. Text us at 218-326-1234. Support for KXE comes from Timberlake Restaurant in Grand